Thank you for tuning into sermons from Liberty Baptist Church in Newport Beach, California. Our goal is to help you know God more and take the next step in your spiritual journey, no matter where you're at. If you have questions about God or about Liberty, you can connect with us at libertybaptistchurch.org. We pray that the Lord will use this message to be a help and encouragement in your life.
Luke chapter 9. If you have your Bibles, if not, there should be one in the seat back in front of you. And as always, we miss our pastor when he is not here. I sort of felt bad a little bit this morning as we walked into the lobby, and I got to meet several first-time guests who are here for the first time today, and I'm thinking, man, I wish Pastor was here so they could hear him today. So you owe it to yourself. If today is your first time, come back next Sunday and come hear Pastor. But I'm glad that you are here, and I'm looking forward to jumping into our series, Peaks and Valleys, as we are going to continue in Luke chapter 9, walking through the Gospel of Luke verse by verse. And as Pastor preached last week, kind of fitting for the theme, Peaks and Valleys. And last week, almost literally, we were on the peak, the Mount of Transfiguration, and in the valley. And I love how Pastor mentioned last week that much of life is lived in the valley. Much of life is lived in the daily grind. And as I looked through the 10 or 11 verses we're going to go through today, I thought to myself, there are not many mountaintop moments in these verses we're going to read today. But before we jump into the passage, I have to start off and I have to be honest with you. You know, they say that the first step towards fixing your problem is admitting that you have one. And so before you all this morning, it's going to help tie in where we're going, but I have to make an admission to all of you, to anybody who ever watches this service on live stream, and here's the admission. Here is the addiction, if you will, that I have, okay? I love sports. That's it. There are not many things I don't think that I'm addicted to as much as this. And it's so bad that sometimes in my house, my wife will have something on the TV and she will say, honey, you don't care about either of these teams. You don't root for them. You don't even care about this sport. You don't even play this sport. Why are we watching this? And I'm saying, because it's sports. I love sports. I'm all in. You should have seen me. If you watched any of the Winter Olympics that are wrapping up, I believe today or sometime this week, we were watching the bobsled this past week, and you should have seen me. I'm sitting on my couch like a bobsled expert. I'm shouting at the women as they're going down the course, and I'm like, what are you? You know you can't be that low coming out of turn 7. Come on. Like, I'm all in, no matter what it is. And I was trying to think through, and you probably have some of these that you've played more than I have, and it could be recreationally, it could be I played some of these on a team, but I wrote some things down. What are some of the sports that I have enjoyed being a part of? And basketball, baseball, football, soccer, kind of your main ones. Golf, recreationally, ping pong, wiffle ball, kickball, dodgeball, softball, I was on a roller hockey team, tennis, pickleball, disc golf, bocce ball, volleyball, spike ball, foosball, horseshoes, cornhole, pool, air hockey, papa shot. Like, if there's a way to keep score, or there's a ball that you hit or chase or kick or throw, I'm in. I am all in. I have even owned some extreme sports equipment that I didn't even know how to use. For instance, when I was a kid, I had a BMX bike that had pegs on the front and on the back, like I was going to go down to the half pipe and grind the rail on my bike. We all know that those were just for transporting your friends around the neighborhood, right? As you're driving around. I didn't know how to use those. I've owned snowboards and rollerblades and all of these different things, but there are two sports that I have enjoyed more than any of the others: football and basketball. I played flag football growing up from kindergarten through my elementary years, and I actually played tackle football in middle school. Football is the sport that I love playing, or I love watching the most on TV. Now, since the Seahawks just won the most boring Super Bowl of all time, and my 49ers got knocked out in the playoffs, this will be the last mention of football in this message, okay? But the other sport, the sport that I played the most, the sport that I worked at the most, the sport that I gave myself to the most and practiced the most, was basketball. And I went to shooting camps, I went to dribbling camps, I went to defensive camps, I worked on my jump shot, I lifted weights, I did whatever I could to be a better basketball player. And as I played through high school and college, as I started to get older, there's one thing that I've heard of, and I thought I might be the exception, but I found out it's true. Father time is undefeated. And the older that I get, I have started to look at the game of basketball less from a player's perspective and more from a coach's perspective. I have enjoyed jumping into coaching, and I coached a little bit of high school basketball in Northern California, and currently I coach our 7th and 8th grade middle school basketball team here. And as a coach, I have realized that there are times during the game where the team is not running the play that I've called for them to run. They are not giving their all on the defensive side of the basketball. They are, I say, here's the defense that I want us to run, and one guy runs in the opposite direction. And there are times during the game where I realize I have to regroup. I have got to get everybody back on the same page. I've got to make sure that I'm clear in what my expectations are. So as the referee is running by me, or if it needs to be and he's across the court, I'm going to shout out, timeout! I need a timeout. And if you ask our guys on our team right now, that is one of the most important times during the basketball game. And I use this phrase a lot with them. I need you to lock in. Right now, I need you to lock in. And if you're ever at any of our, if you're ever at any of our games, you'll see I almost do the exact same thing every single time. If it's a full timeout, I get them on the bench, I get everybody around me, and I get in my coach's stance like this, right? And I always have this with me. Every single time, I've got my clipboard. And here's what I do. I'll drop the clipboard in front of me just like this. I'll get down as I'm looking them in their face, and I'll say, man, last time you ran this way, and I need you to come this way. And on defense, here's we're going to be here and here and here, and we're going to trap in this box over here. And I'm pointing it all out to them, and I'm drawing it out for them. Because what I want them to do, and this isn't going to make any sense to you, but when they're watching and paying attention, here's what I want from them. When they go back out on the court, I want to be exactly clear what my expectations are for my team. Timeouts are not for punishment. Timeouts are for correction, and they're for clarity, and they are for coaching up my team. And as we jump into the passage we're in today, this is exactly what Jesus does three separate times. The disciples are coming off of the mount, and three times Jesus is basically like, I've got to call a spiritual timeout. I have got to regroup. I've got to get everybody together. We all need to be on the same page. And Jesus then calls a timeout so he can clarify, this is exactly what I'm expecting of you moving forward. Can we jump into our passage this morning? Luke chapter 9. We're leaving off, pastor left off at verse number 45. So we're going to jump into Luke chapter 9 and verse number 46. And as we look at the passage today and we look at some of these, we'll call them coaching tips that Jesus is giving his disciples. I really truly believe that we can take these three separate, we'll call them spiritual timeouts, these times when Jesus gets his disciples and he gets them close and he clarifies his expectation for them. But all three of these areas, I believe, we need to kind of take an introspective look and say, man, where am I at on this? And am I doing what Jesus is expecting of me? Luke chapter 9. Let's look in verse number 46. We're going to kind of break down the passage as we go this morning. Luke chapter 9 and verse number 46 says this, then there arose a reasoning among them, which of them should be the greatest? And Jesus, perceiving the thought of their heart, took a child and set him by him and said unto them, the disciples, whosoever shall receive this child in my name receiveth me, and whosoever shall receive me receiveth him that sent me. For he that is least among you all, the same shall be great. And I see during this first time out that Jesus gathers his disciples close and he addresses their pride. He addresses their pride. And if we can just be honest for a minute and we can just have a normal talk, I feel like I use this a lot when I'm preaching. My father-in-law, I heard him say this all of the time, and I know I've said it here. Don't just read the Bible, live the Bible. Put yourself in the pages and think through, man, where did the disciples come from? What is going on in the story right now? And if we remember last week where pastor had preached, they went up, he took Peter, James, and John up into the Mount of Transfiguration, and they saw the glory of God come down and shine, and they saw Moses and Elijah. And as they were doing this, then they came back down, and the nine disciples stayed down in the valley, and they continued in the work of God. And when they were coming down, then the dad, remember, with the demon-possessed son, comes to Jesus, and they saw Jesus cast this demon out of this boy. And then Jesus gives them the saying, and he says, I want you to let this sink into your ears. I really want you to pay attention. The Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men. And he's saying to them, I am about to go and die and give my life. We've got to make sure we are all on the same page here. That's literally what just happened. Mount of Transfiguration, Jesus cast out a demon. You got to pay attention. I'm going to go die for you. And it leads right into where we're talking about. The first verse says, and they argued who amongst them was the greatest. Now there's two parallel passages, Matthew chapter 18 and Mark chapter 9. Mark chapter 9 gives a little bit more detail into this exact same story. And it basically says, when they were coming down, they went from Mount Hermon, where the Mount of Transfiguration happened, down into Capernaum, and they were heading towards a house. And as they were going down the way to the house, it mentions Jesus heard the disciples arguing and fighting and bickering behind him. And when they finally get to the house, Jesus says, what was it that you guys were fighting about? In Mark chapter 9, it says, they held their peace. They didn't say anything. And in Luke, it says, he discerned what was in their hearts. So after all of this had happened, they come into this house and they are arguing between them which of them was the greatest. Now, let's live this moment for a second. You have to understand the competing dynamics between the disciples that are going on right now. Peter, James, and John were just asked to go up into the Mount of Transfiguration. Those three all by themselves, kind of the inner circle of Jesus. And then it said when they came down from the mount, they told no man. They kind of kept it to themselves how awesome this experience was. And the other nine were down in the valley continuing the work of God. And just at the beginning of chapter 9, they had gotten the power to heal the sick and the lame and to raise people from the dead. And they just got this power. So they were doing all of these different things. So can you imagine, just live this with me for a second. I know this is my probably hypothetical brain in overdrive, but can you imagine Peter, James, and John coming down the mount, and then they see all the other disciples, and they're like, man, we really wish we could tell you what just happened, but we were with Jesus, and it was amazing, and like, he only took us three. Like, we have to definitely be in, like, we're probably the top three. And then what, Peter's probably like, well, it's always Peter, James, and John. I'm always mentioned first, so I've got to be the top. And John's probably like, no. If you read the Gospel of John, which hasn't been written yet, when you read it, it's going to say, the one whom Jesus loved, I'm probably the closest to Jesus. And so they're arguing, they're fighting amongst themselves. And then can you imagine the nine who had just been able to heal the sick and the lame, and they've been all over the town, they've been healing people. And they're like, well, you went up there, but you missed down here. Man, I healed this lady. And can you imagine, like, Bartholomew's like, hey, Thaddeus, how many did you heal? And Thaddeus is like, I had four in that last city. And Thaddeus is like, what about you, Andrew? He's like, I had three. Philip's like, I had one. He's like, dude, what a loser. He only had one. Like, they're fighting amongst themselves. And they're like, you may have gone up with Jesus, but we've been down here actually doing the work of Jesus. And they are fighting amongst themselves which of them is the greatest. After Jesus had literally just done the Mount of Transfiguration, cast out a demon that they couldn't cast out, and told them, I'm about to die. Can you imagine the pride that is in their hearts if this is literally the argument that they are having amongst themselves in this moment? So what does Jesus do? The master storyteller, the master illustrator, Jesus does something brilliant in this moment that he understands the disciples, it will resonate with them. You see, because during this time and in this culture, children were of little to no significant value at all. They had no voice in the city. They had no power to make decisions. They were literally considered the least. And he brings a child in. It is in Mark chapter 9, it talks about how they made it into a house. And they're sitting in a house, I can almost imagine in a circle. And Jesus literally sets a child in the middle of them. And he looks at him, he says, what were you guys fighting about? And then none of them wanted to say, but Jesus discerned in their heart. So he grabs a child and he brings him in the middle and he says this, whoever receives this child receives me. If you receive me, you receive him that sent me. But pay attention. Then he goes in and he says, whoever of you is the least will be the greatest. He has just brought society-wise the least, and he's put it in the midst of the disciples, and he says, of all of you, this person in the kingdom's sake is greater than all of you right now. Because of the pride that you have in your heart, you are not understanding the value that I'm putting on humility. And the word least here, as you studied out, the word least talks about having the giving yourself making yourself the most lowly and humble and willing to serve. And so in their pride, they're saying, man, I'm the greatest. No, I'm the greatest. And he's like, you're missing the point. Because earthly power and earthly status is the exact opposite of what heavenly status is. As Jesus goes through and he basically explains out to them, right? In the world system, greatness on earth is considered what? Power and prestige and fame and platform and recognition. And Jesus is saying, if that's the world's greatness, heavenly greatness, true greatness is measured in humility and your ability to serve others. And Jesus gathers the disciples as they are arguing about this, and he addresses their pride. Pastor David Guzek said this, when people are focused on their own exaltation, they will always attempt to advance themselves at the expense of others. It reminds me, when I was studying this week, of, we know the verse, Proverbs chapter 13, right? Proverbs 13, verse number 10, I have it here. Only by pride cometh contention. What Solomon is saying here is if there is conflict in your life, pride is somewhere in the room. If we think about that for a moment in our lives, that tension in your marriage, the problem at work with your coworker or your boss, with that family member of yours that you just don't see eye to eye, that thing that you're holding on to that you just can't let go of, boiled down at their very core, there's pride. Why? Well, because pride says, I deserve more. Pride says, I deserve better. How do we live our life? I want to make sure that my wants and my desires and my needs are taken care of before everybody else. Pride says, me first. And Jesus is gathering the disciples, and I think for all of us this morning, he's reminding us, if you want to be great, be last. Well, where do we get this example from? Philippians chapter 2, right? Verse number 5. We have, I think, the verse on the screen here. It says this, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, and took upon him the form of a servant, and was made in the likeness of men, and being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. The greatest example of humility ever displayed was Jesus Christ. And he humbled himself enough to go to a cross and pay for sins that he didn't commit. If anybody had an argument in that moment, it was Jesus, right? I didn't do this. These are not my sins. But he humbly laid down his life for you and for me. So this week, friend, may we understand the timeout that Jesus is calling and addressing their pride, saying, life is not all about you. This week, Jesus condemns your pride. That problem in your marriage starts with pride. That problem at work starts with pride. And Jesus shows us that in the kingdom of God, the way up starts by making yourself lowly and serving others. Let's continue on in our passage. We read 46, 47, and 48. And here's, again, in a crazy, we're not going to take the time this morning. Jesus then addresses their pride. And then look at verse number 49, how it starts off. We're not going to take a lot of time on this. And John answered and said, Master, we saw one casting out devils in thy name, and we forbade him because he followeth not with us. That has nothing to do with what Jesus just talked about. But John is going on here. Look at verse number 50. And Jesus said unto him, forbid him not, for he that is not against us is for us. One more time, Jesus calls a time out. John is trying to argue back with what Jesus just said. And he's like, no, hold on. Let me make sure that we are all on the same page here. And Jesus takes a second time out and he addresses their unnecessary divisions. I think in this moment, there's still a sense of pride. But if we mentioned earlier, stop for a minute and just take context of what just happened. The disciples came down from the mount. And if you remember, the dad with the demon-possessed boy came to Jesus and he says, I just asked your disciples to cast out this demon of my son and they couldn't do it. So can you help do this? And Pastor talked last week, right? The disciples were powerless and faithless and clueless. And in this moment, he was talking about they're powerless and they couldn't cast this demon out. But then John comes and says, we couldn't do it, but we just saw someone down the road and they were casting out a demon and they were doing it in your name, but I told them to stop. And Jesus corrects him and he says in verse number 50, forbid him not to, why are you stopping him? For he that is not against us is for us. And I want to address a portion of the problem listed in this verse. And I won't take a ton of time on this because I don't think that this has a huge contingent of the people here at Liberty. But being faithful to the text, I think we need to make sure that we are explaining out that Jesus is 100% condemning the disciples having a spirit towards others who are faithfully serving God, but who are not doing it with the disciples the exact same way and in the exact same group. I think it's important for us to hear Jesus' words in these moments of stop hindering, stop being against those who are working for Christ. They are not our enemy. Just because someone isn't in your circle or in your tribe or in your clique or in your small part of your denomination doesn't mean God is not using them to impact others for the cause of Christ. I think it's important this morning to remember that no individual church has a monopoly on the power of God. And we need to understand that no church has a monopoly on biblical wisdom. And when there may be a church who doctrinally are doing things correct, but preferentially maybe doing things a little bit differently, they are not our enemy. And if they're reaching people, they are on our team. It's important to understand we need to be thankful if sin is opposed, and be thankful if the gospel is preached, and be thankful if lives are being changed, and be thankful if the devil's work is being pulled down. That person is on my team whether they're a part of my church or not. Philippians chapter 1 says if Paul is going and he mentions if Christ is preached, I rejoice. We have two verses I'm going to have you look at real quickly. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. And verse number 12, look at this. And now I say this, that every one of you saith, I am of Paul, and I am of Apollos, and I of Cephas, and I of Christ. Look at verse 13. Is Christ divided? Was Paul crucified for you? Paul continues on in 1 Corinthians chapter 3. We're going to look at the last verse, 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse number 9, verse 8. Now he that planteth and he that watereth are one, and every man shall receive his own reward. Verse 9, for we are laborers together with God. It's important to understand at the end of the day, Jesus is saying it's not our church versus their church, our pastor versus their pastor. If we're working together to impact this world, we must praise God if people are being saved and Christ is magnified. But there's a caveat. I think it's also important as I look across the room and I know some of the stories of the people that are now a part of Liberty, it's also vitally important that we clarify. This is not talking about churches with wrong doctrinal issues. This is not talking about, this is not talking about Baptist versus Catholicism or Mormons or Jehovah's Witness, people who have what we believe to be a wrong doctrinal view. Jesus is not saying, hey, they're on our team, be all for them. We have to understand this morning, if a church gets up and they do not preach that Jesus Christ was born of a virgin and he is deity, he is the Son of God and God himself all wrapped in one, and that he came and he died on the cross as a substitutionary payment for my sins and he shed his blood, and the only way that I can get to heaven is by placing my faith and trust in Jesus Christ by grace through faith alone, and it's not my works, it's nothing that I can do to get to heaven, and once I'm saved, the Holy Spirit comes and he seals me until the day of redemption in the eternal security of the believer. If they don't preach that, they're not on our team. And I know that's hard to hear this morning, but we have to clarify, Jesus is saying, that's not who the disciples were talking about in this passage, but we need to make sure as a church we clarify who we are. And so we have to understand when we talk about this passage this morning, this is not who the disciples were talking about. This was somebody who was on their team, and they were a little bit jealous, and pride filled their heart, and so they told him to stop. How do we know this? Look at the wording, verse number 49. And John answered and said, Master, Jesus, we saw one casting out devils. Check this. I love this wording. We saw them casting out devils in thy name. It was all about Jesus, but, and we forbade him because he followeth not with us. It went from being about Jesus to being about them. He was doing it in your name, but he wasn't following us. He wasn't a part of our clique or our tribe. They raised their mission above the mission itself. In Liberty Baptist Church, can I tell us this morning, we've got to be so very careful if we ever start to make the mission about us and not about Jesus Christ. When we come on Sunday mornings It is not about us. It is not about what we do. It's not about how we serve. It's not about how we sing. When we come on Sunday mornings, it's all about Jesus. It's about the one who saved us. It's about the one who made us whole. It's about the one who healed our bodies when the doctor said there was no hope. It's about the one who brought our wayward child back to us. It's about the one who corrected our marriage problems that we never thought could be corrected. It's about the one who brought us out of addiction. When we come on Sunday mornings, it's all about Jesus. And oftentimes we start to think that it's all about us. And Jesus is saying, you have it completely wrong. It is not about us. It's all about Jesus. But I think sometimes we have to be careful. We don't have tribalism. We don't fracture the wonderful unity that God is trying to bring in here. And people saying either at a part of our church or other churches, well, they don't worship the same way we do, or they don't dress the same way we do, or they don't have the structure of Sunday school or small groups the same way that we do, or careful, they didn't vote the same way that we did. Jesus is saying, guess what? If they preach Christ, they're on our team. And he's trying to explain that to the disciples. And he calls a time out and he gathers everybody close. And he addresses their pride. And secondly, he addressed their unnecessary divisions. Lastly, this morning, look with me in verse number 51. We're going to wrap these last six verses into one and be done. It says this, and it came to pass when the time was come that he should be received up. He steadfastly, Jesus, set his face to go to Jerusalem and sent messengers before his face, and they went and entered into a village of the Samaritans to make ready for him. And they did not, the Samaritans did not receive him because his face was as though he would go to Jerusalem. And when his disciples, James and John, saw this, they said, Lord, wilt thou that we command fire to come down from heaven and consume them, even as Elias did? But he turned and he rebuked them and he said, ye know not what matter of spirit ye are of, for the Son of Man is not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. And they went to another village. I see the last spiritual timeout that Jesus calls this morning. He calls to address their lack of compassion for the lost. Church family, if I can be honest with you this morning, my prayer this week is that you take something, one thing this week, and maybe it's pride, maybe it's divisions, but I pray that as a church family, we really catch on to what Jesus is trying to say in these few verses. Verse number 51, allow me to give you just a history lesson and then we'll wrap everything up this morning. Verse 51, Jesus talks about how his face was steadfastly set to Jerusalem. As Pastor mentioned, we're going to wrap up this series next week. And then starting in chapter 10, Jesus is making his way to Jerusalem, where they were at. They were on the north side, Mount of Transfiguration, Mount Hermon. They traveled a little bit south to Capernaum, and Jerusalem was down here on the south, and they had to go from Capernaum down to Jerusalem because Jesus, he had been with his disciples for over 2 years at this point, and he's going to go ahead and start making his way to the cross. He says, my time has now come. I'm setting my face and my direction towards Jerusalem because that's the end goal. He veers off to a city here too, but at this point, he doesn't really go back and forth north and south. He heads south towards Jerusalem. And where they were at in the house in Capernaum and where Jerusalem was at, to go straight down from Capernaum to Jerusalem, they would have to go through Samaria. I know many of you already know. Forgive me for giving a history lesson, but the Samaritans, people of Samaria, were half Jew and half Gentile. Gentile meaning if you have no Jewish bloodline, you are a Gentile. This morning, I'm a Gentile. Most of us in the room are probably Gentile. We don't have any Jewish bloodline in us. But these people, these Samaritans, were half Jew, half Gentile, a mixed race. And because of this, the Jewish people looked down on the Samaritans. They called them dogs. And because of this, the Samaritans began to hate the Jewish people. And there was civil unrest and infighting between the Samaritans and the Jewish people. So much so, they didn't want anything to do with literally the people that surrounded them. If you remember John chapter 4, when Jesus meets the woman at the well, it's in the town of Sychar, a town of Samaria, and she's sitting on Jacob's well, and I'm going to paraphrase it for a minute, but as Jesus starts to talk to her, what does she say? Why are you asking me for a drink? You're a Jew, I'm a Samaritan, and we don't talk to each other. There was such infighting and civil unrest between the Samaritans and the Jews. So it makes sense that as James and John try to go down to prepare the way for Jesus, the Samaritans are like, we know exactly who you are. Jesus, his fame has now been spread abroad. We don't want anything to do with you. And they say, we do not want you here. Well, then what happens with James and John? You can look there in verse number 54. And when his disciples, James and John, saw this, they said, Lord, wilt thou that we command fire to come down from heaven and consume them, even as Elias did. Again, follow with me, okay? 20 seconds. Where did James and John just come from? The Mount of Transfiguration. Who did they see on the Mount of Transfiguration? Elijah. 1 Kings chapter 18, right? He called the fire down and consumed the prophets of Baal. They saw Elijah and they're like, oh, we've got this great idea. Jesus, these sinners, these people in Samaria, they don't want anything to do with you. We just saw Elijah. I've got a great idea. Let's call down fire from heaven. Let's nuke these boys and let's continue on through our way. Jesus looks at them. And if you have children and your children sometimes say something and you're like, what in the world? Like facepalm emoji. I could just imagine Jesus like shaking his head. What does he say? You do not even understand what spirit you're of. You don't even understand what you're saying right now. I didn't come to destroy lives. I came to save them. Can I give us the thought that we're going to hopefully leave with this morning? I really believe in this moment, James and John, they wanted fire and consumption of the sinners without forgetting that they used to be sinners. Who were James and John? Fishermen lost on the Sea of Galilee. Jesus didn't call down fire from heaven and consume them as sinners. Jesus had compassion. And he reached out and he said, I want to save you. Will you help me on this journey? But James and John are saying, man, no, forget these sinners. Let's call down fire from heaven. They forgot where they used to be. And Jesus reminds us of a vitally important lesson this morning. Don't be surprised when lost people act like lost people. In essence, James and John, they're frustrated. They want the message of God to get to these sinners. And when they are rejected, they said, let's forget about them. Let's take care of them. So the question I have for you this morning is, where did you used to be? Did you used to be caught up in addiction? Your home messed up. Your marriage messed up. Maybe you were like me. You were born and raised in a Christian home. Guess what? I was still lost. And I'm so thankful this morning for the compassion that Jesus Christ had for me as a sinner. But I think if you're like me, I'm preaching to myself. This point affected me this week. If you're like me, sometimes now on Sundays, we're professional Christians. Sometimes we even dress up a little bit. And we come to church. And then we leave. And all throughout that week, we pass lost people all day long. And we forget that used to be us. What was Jesus' response? What was Jesus' call to his disciples and his followers as he was leaving earth? Right? We know that Jesus Christ, he died, he was raised again 3 days later. He was on earth for about 40 days. And as he was about to ascend up into heaven and his followers were gathered around him, follow with me, Jesus did not look at them in that moment and say, I want you to be faithful to church. He didn't say, I want you to give. I want you to be good people. All of those are found in Scripture as really good things to do. But the last command that Jesus gave us as he left earth was this. I want you to go out and I want you to find as many lost people as you can. And I want you to bring them in and I want you to see them saved. And I want you to help them get baptized. And after they're baptized, I want you to help them grow in a thriving relationship with Jesus Christ. If that's compassion, how is our compassion for the lost? And you say, not me, Pastor Mike, I've got compassion for the lost. I remember where I used to be. Then my question is this, when is the last time you invited someone to church? When's the last time you shared the life-changing news of the gospel with somebody? This hit me this week, but I cannot say that I have compassion for the lost if I'm not telling anybody. We go around a lost world around us all day long, every week. And Jesus Christ is saying, I want you to have a compassion for the lost that are around you. Jesus, like a good coach, in our passage today, had to call three separate timeouts. He got out his clipboard, if you will, for his team. Like I gather my team around and I tell them the X's and O's of the plays. And Jesus wrote out, timeout number one, pride. How's your pride? Life is not all about you. Are we living our life to serve others? They go on for a minute and he says, time out, time out. Time out number two, unnecessary divisions. If they are preaching Christ, they are on our team. Let's encourage people. Let's try to reach as many people as we can. Time out number three, compassion for the lost. My question to you this morning is this, and maybe it was just me as I was studying this out. I'm prideful. Sometimes I get frustrated and there's divisions with people and churches and all these things. But number three, I was more convicted that I go around and there is a lost world around me that I am not trying to impact as much as I can. So this week, what is Jesus trying to coach you on? What is he calling a timeout? Because Jesus wants to make it explicitly clear what his expectations are for you and for me. And I pray this week we would take a look at how he talked to his disciples and we would apply these scriptural truths to our life as well.
Thank you for listening to Messages from Liberty. Tune in next week for more Bible teaching or subscribe on iTunes to stay up to date with our current series.